Hello. This is the listening part of your Year 12 exam in English. It will consist of three tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. You have a minute to read the task.
Barry Haddo, who travels 547 kilometres from Wales to London and back each day, has been named Commuter of the Year by British Rail. An early morning radio programme organised the competition to find the person who commutes the furthest every day. Haddo, who spends more than 6 hours travelling each day, was the winner. He saves time by shaving the night before, gets up before 6 o'clock, and has cereal for breakfast to avoid cooking. A high-speed train takes him to London at 200 kilometres an hour. In London, he jumps into a taxi to get to his office, where he works as an engineer in the oil industry. Why does he do it?
I love Wales. The golf, the low cost of living.
Haddo's prize was a rail vacation for himself, his wife and their two children.
A 34-year-old man recently returned home after travelling around the world for 8 years by bicycle. Masami Kono, a former supermarket employee, started from Osaka and cycled 59,464 kilometres in 5 continents, Australia, North and South America, Europe and Africa, before reaching his final destination, Niamey, Niger, in Africa. He beat the previous Japanese record for a bicycle trip by over 17,000 kilometres. After spending the 1 million yen he had saved for the journey, Kono had to work at various jobs along the way. He earned money as a judo teacher, a waiter, a fisherman, a security guard and a gardener. He usually camped in a tent to save money. When Kono was asked why he decided to cycle around the world, he said that before he got married and settled down, he wanted to do something that he could tell his children about. But he added that after working for a while, he would like to try one more journey.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Barry Haddo, who travels 547 kilometres from Wales to London and back each day, has been named Commuter of the Year by British Rail. An early morning radio programme organised the competition to find the person who commutes the furthest every day. Haddo, who spends more than 6 hours travelling each day, was the winner. He saves time by shaving the night before, gets up before 6 o'clock, and has cereal for breakfast to avoid cooking. A high-speed train takes him to London at 200 kilometers an hour. In London, he jumps into a taxi to get to his office, where he works as an engineer in the oil industry. Why does he do it?
I love Wales, the golf, the low cost of living.
Haddo's prize was a rail vacation for himself, his wife, and their two children.
A 34-year-old man recently returned home after travelling around the world for 8 years by bicycle. Masami Kono, a former supermarket employee, started from Osaka and cycled 59,464 kilometres in 5 continents, Australia, North and South America, Europe and Africa, before reaching his final destination, Niamey, Niger, in Africa. He beat the previous Japanese record for a bicycle trip by over 17,000 kilometres. After spending the 1 million yen he had saved for the journey, Kono had to work at various jobs along the way. He earned money as a judo teacher, a waiter, a fisherman, a security guard and a gardener. He usually camped in a tent to save money. When Kono was asked why he decided to cycle around the world, he said that before he got married and settled down, he wanted to do something that he could tell his children about. But he added that after working for a while, he would like to try one more journey.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task one. Go on to task two. You have a minute to read the task.
Twenty-five-year-old Beth Corey went to the movies with her boyfriend Kevin O'Keefe last week and had a big surprise. As they waited for the main feature to begin, she saw Kevin on the screen. When she asked Kevin what was happening, he told her to keep watching. In a short silent movie, three of O'Keefe's male friends dressed as women competed for his attention. But O'Keefe ignored the women and remained true to Corey, holding a photograph of her to his chest. He then spoke to the camera and proposed to Corey. "Beth, I love you, and I'll do anything to have you forever. Will you marry me?" said the subtitles. O'Keefe, 25, who has dated Corey for 6 years, had worked for a year on the 4-minute film. When it was done, he asked the movie theater to play it before the main feature. Corey said yes.
With a piercing whistle in a London court yesterday, a stolen parrot recognized his owner and sent a man to jail. Barney, an Amazon parrot worth $1,000, had been stolen from 27-year-old Georgina Morgan some months before and was found by police in the apartment of suspected burglar Eric Buckley. In court, Buckley said the bird was his and that its name was Blue. Ms. Morgan said the bird's name was Barney and that it was hers. So the bird was brought into court in a covered cage and released. When the door of the cage was opened, Barney completely ignored Buckley. Instead, he flew straight toward Ms. Morgan's, squawked his own name, let out a whistle, and allowed her to tickle him under his beak.
You have 2 minutes now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Twenty-five-year-old Beth Corey went to the movies with her boyfriend, Kevin O'Keefe, last week and had a big surprise. As they waited for the main feature to begin, she saw Kevin on the screen. When she asked Kevin what was happening, he told her to keep watching. In a short silent movie, three of O'Keefe's male friends, dressed as women, competed for his attention. But O'Keefe ignored the women and remained true to Corey, holding a photograph of her to his chest. He then spoke to the camera and proposed to Corey. "Beth, I love you, and I'll do anything to have you forever. Will you marry me?" said the subtitles. O'Keefe, 25, who has dated Corey for 6 years, had worked for a year on the 4-minute film. When it was done, he asked the movie theater to play it before the main feature. Corey said yes.
With a piercing whistle in a London court yesterday, a stolen parrot recognized his owner and sent a man to jail. Barney, an Amazon parrot worth $1,000, had been stolen from 27-year-old Georgina Morgan some months before and was found by police in the apartment of suspected burglar Eric Buckley. In court, Buckley said the bird was his and that its name was Blue. Ms. Morgan said the bird's name was Barney and that it was hers. So the bird was brought into court in a covered cage and released. When the door of the cage was opened, Barney completely ignored Buckley. Instead, he flew straight toward Ms. Morgan's, squawked his own name, let out a whistle, and allowed her to tickle him under his beak.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task two. Go on to task three. You have a minute to read the task.
Do you find these days that it's more difficult meeting people? In social situations with strangers, do you wind up asking yourself, am I dressed wrong today or something? A new study says it's not you at all. The problem is Americans are, generally speaking, more shy than many people would expect, and getting shyer all the time. Philip Zimbardo is a professor of psychology at Stanford University who runs a shyness clinic in Palo Alto. He's the author of numerous studies on shyness. Good morning, Professor Zimbardo.
Good morning.
Your earlier studies showed shyness already widespread, but what about the newest figures?
Our research, which we've been conducting since 1972, focused on adults who were shy. Before our research started, of course, the interest was always in shy children. And to our amazement, we discovered that about 40% of all Americans label themselves as currently shy. And over the past 10 years, that figure has increased to about 48%. What that means is 2 out of every 5 people you meet think of themselves as shy, and now that figure is moving toward 1 out of 2, which is a surprise, especially to foreigners who think of Americans as bold and outgoing.
Why is shyness so common, and why is it becoming even more common?
Well, shyness is a fascinating problem because at one level, to be shy means to be reticent, to be self-conscious. It's a kind of social phobia, fear of people, and it's very hard to avoid people. And there are just many things in a culture, our culture, which leads lots of people to be shy. We have a very competitive culture. We have a culture where people are constantly being evaluated, notion of individual merit. That starts in school and at work really extends for many people to their social life. But what's been happening recently is a whole series of social forces that are increasingly isolating people from normal day-to-day informal social contact, which is essential to be a social being.
A set of social factors, you say. What do you mean?
Well, first, the electronic revolution replaces people with computer chips wherever possible.
So there's just less opportunity for social interaction. People forget about...
Well, people don't forget. They don't learn. Young people don't learn it in the first place. They don't practice it. They don't see it practiced as you have. So this gets really complicated because computers, computer games are things people can play alone. You don't need other people the way you used to in the past. And also, as families get smaller, as both parents work, children don't have the opportunity to see their parents and relatives relating in a natural, easy, friendly way.
Professor Zimbardo, when you say shy, when you say it's a problem, what kind of shyness do you mean? Many people feel some awkwardness in social situations if they're the object of attention from others.
Virtually all the people that we have surveyed say shyness is undesirable. Shy people are less popular, have fewer friends, they have lower self-esteem, they make less money. They have fewer leadership skills. They're more likely to be depressed. And as you get older, more likely to be lonely.
So this is not just a momentary shyness that people feel. This is something that really marks their lives.
Yeah, the momentary shyness is something we call situational shyness. That is, if you're on a blind date, if you're asked to perform in public where you're not really prepared, or if your mother says, you know, play the piano for Aunt Tilly, well, you have the feelings of shyness, the arousal, the negative thoughts, the physical tension. But that is situational. So you say to yourself, well, that's not me. That's that external situation, which I have to avoid. It's when it becomes chronic and dispositional. You begin to see shyness as Quasimodo's hump, the thing you carry around with you that's always there. And even if people in the world don't notice it, you know it's there ready to emerge.
When you're at a cocktail party or just in conversation with someone anywhere and you recognize that they're shy, what do you do to draw them out or try to make them more comfortable?
Essentially, what we say, for example, to shy people is, if you begin with the knowledge that maybe half the people out there are also shy, then when you're in a situation, do your best to find those other people, those kindred souls. And a great way to break the ice is to talk about how uncomfortable these situations make you feel, and you presume the other. Admitting your shyness is really an important first step, because if you don't, people make misattributions. That is, if you don't perform in a situation where people expect you to perform, to smile, to be outgoing, to start a conversation, people assume you're dumb. You're unmotivated, you're boring, or you're not interested in them. You're bored or boring. And those are terrible misattributions, especially if you're attractive as a man or beautiful as a woman and shy. Then it's a double handicap, because people then assume you are aloof, you are condescending, you think you're too good for them.
Professor Zimbardo?
Yes.
Are you shy?
No, not at all.
You have 2 minutes now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Do you find these days that it's more difficult meeting people? In social situations with strangers, do you wind up asking yourself, am I dressed wrong today or something? A new study says it's not you at all. The problem is Americans are, generally speaking, more shy than many people would expect, and getting shyer all the time. Philip Zimbardo is a professor of psychology at Stanford University who runs a shyness clinic in Palo Alto. He's the author of numerous studies on shyness. Good morning, Professor Zimbardo.
Good morning.
Your earlier studies showed shyness already widespread, but what about the newest figures?
Our research, which we've been conducting since 1972, focused on adults who were shy. Before our research started, of course, the interest was always in shy children. And to our amazement, we discovered that about 40% of all Americans label themselves as currently shy. And Over the past 10 years, that figure has increased to about 48%. What that means is 2 out of every 5 people you meet think of themselves as shy, and now that figure is moving toward 1 out of 2, which is a surprise, especially to foreigners who think of Americans as bold and outgoing.
Why is shyness so common, and why is it becoming even more common?
Well, shyness is a fascinating problem because at one level, to be shy means to be reticent, to be self-conscious. It's a kind of social phobia, fear of people, and it's very hard to avoid people. And there are just many things in a culture, our culture, which leads lots of people to be shy. We have a very competitive culture. We have a culture where people are constantly being evaluated. Notion of individual merit that starts in school and at work really extends for many people to their social life. But what's been happening recently is a whole series of social forces that are increasingly isolating people from normal day-to-day informal social contact, which is essential to be a social being.
A set of social factors, you say. What do you mean?
Well, first, the electronic revolution replaces people with computer chips wherever possible.
So there's just less opportunity for social interaction. People forget about...
Well, people don't forget. They don't learn. Young people don't learn it in the first place. They don't practice it. They don't see it practiced as you have. So this gets really complicated because computers, computer games are things people can play alone. You don't need other people the way you used to in the past. And also, as families get smaller, as both parents work, children don't have the opportunity to see their parents and relatives relating in a natural, easy, friendly way.
Professor Zimbardo, when you say shy, when you say it's a problem, what kind of shyness do you mean? Many people feel some awkwardness in social situations if they're the object of attention from others.
Virtually all the people that we have surveyed say shyness is undesirable. Shy people are less popular, have fewer friends, they have lower self-esteem, they make less money. They have fewer leadership skills. They're more likely to be depressed. And as you get older, more likely to be lonely.
So this is not just a momentary shyness that people feel. This is something that really marks their lives.
Yeah, the momentary shyness is something we call situational shyness. That is, if you're on a blind date, if you're asked to perform in public where you're not really prepared, or if your mother says, you know, play the piano for Aunt Tilly, well, you have the feelings of shyness, the arousal, the negative thoughts, the physical tension. But that is situational. So you say to yourself, well, that's not me. That's that external situation, which I have to avoid. It's when it becomes chronic and dispositional. You begin to see shyness as Quasimodo's hump, the thing you carry around with you that's always there. And even if people in the world don't notice it, you know it's there ready to emerge.
When you're at a cocktail party or just in conversation with someone anywhere and you recognize that they're shy, what do you do to draw them out or try to make them more comfortable?
Essentially, what we say, for example, to shy people is, if you begin with the knowledge that maybe half the people out there are also shy, then when you're in a situation, do your best to find those other people, those kindred souls. A great way to break the ice is to talk about how uncomfortable these situations make you feel, and you presume the other. Admitting your shyness is really an important first step, because if you don't, people make misattributions. That is, if you don't perform in a situation where people expect you to perform, to smile, to be outgoing, to start a conversation, people assume you're dumb, you're unmotivated, you're boring, or you're not interested in them, you're bored or boring. And those are terrible misattributions, especially if you're attractive as a man or beautiful as a woman and shy. Then it's a double handicap, because people then assume you are aloof, you are condescending, you think you're too good for them.
Professor Zimbardo?
Yes.
Are you shy?
No, not at all.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 3 and the whole listening test.